Coincidentally, Evil Dead 2 starts, as Evil Dead 1 did, with a cabin in the woods.
Exactly.
So,
this is the Black Market Toast Podcast, where we take a piece of media out of the cupboard, dust it off, toast it up, and serve it up as something completely new. This is episode 20, and we are jumping off of Evil Dead 2.
Evil Dead 2, which is, obviously, it's the second movie in the Evil Dead series, but it's a complete 180 in direction from the first film.
Yeah, the first film was a more...
legit.
It was a more horror film with a touch of humor in Evil Dead 2.
Right, Evil Dead 2, they said, you know what? Screw it. We're just going to make a parody gore fest, mm-hmm. you know, with chainsaw arms and all sorts of fun things.
Well, and the one thing that jumped out at me when I was looking at my video on demand options for this, both on Google and on Amazon, it's listed as PG.
Really?
And... so that made me had to look. I had to figure out why. Yeah. And apparently the film was never rated because, and they like created a fake production house to release it
right. So
that it wouldn't be rated because
this was so ultra violent.
Well, it was before Showgirls was the first NC-17 movie.
Yeah.
So NC-17 didn't exist. So it was going to get an X rating.
Oh, which means would you can have only been, show it at theaters with sticky floors.
Yeah, which you know, in the 80s, an X rating basically was porno.
Yeah.
And so you'd get no release, you know, no publicity, right. Nothing. So it would have had an X rating. So instead of Dino De Laurentiis releasing it, it was released by Rosebud Pictures and never run through the MPAA.
Nice.
So
now it gets a...
So now showing up, it shows up on Google Play and Amazon and probably iTunes as PG.
That's hilarious.
Which is awful.
It's great because the way they did it is very, very intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... because you can't... there was really no way to edit that movie down to get an R rating.
No.
I mean,
yeah, they did make attempts. There were scenes where the blood was black instead of red.
Yeah.
There were attempts to knock it down, but you know, they just got to a point where they looked at it and went, there's no way.
That's and I mean, I really, and you can't take Evil Dead 2 seriously.
Right.
You know, it's one of those films where I'm sure that had it been released and they'd have tried to rate it, that you would have had the parents in the 80s go, oh, you know, it's too violent and think about the children. It's really, if you go into that movie really thinking, you know, that this is serious, mm-hmm. you know, attempt at showing you gore, you're kidding yourself.
Right.
I mean, it really is just sort of a slapstick gore fest, and we're just going to have blood for the sake of blood, and we're going to have, you know, dismemberments. And...
There was blood to the point where, there was a scene where a guy was dragged down into the basement, and just, you know, copious amounts of blood, Kara syrup, dyed red, comes flying out of the basement, and the thing that I watched something on YouTube, and apparently the guy almost died in that scene. Because of the angle that he was at and just the volume of the syrup, he almost drowned.
By the way, iTunes does have it rated R.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So iTunes is rated.
So Google and Amazon have it rated PG.
Go Google and Amazon. Apple, what are you doing? But it was just, I don't know. I loved it. And I always loved it for its over the top.
Mm-hmm.
You know, craziness. It was one of those movies that I think the first time I ever watched it, because it never came on TV.
No, it can't.
Because you can't.
Yeah.
It might now, but it can't, you know, come on TV. I think it was one of those movies that, like, it came on HBO.
Right.
At, like, 3 in the morning or whatever, and I watched it, and I was like, this is hilarious. I had never... I saw Evil Dead 2 before I had even seen Evil Dead.
Yeah.
And so I was like, this movie's great! You know, it's hilarious, the amount of just craziness that goes on.
Yeah, that's not that uncommon to see Evil Dead before Evil Dead, and it's also not uncommon to see Army of Darkness before seeing either of those.
Yeah.
Because Army of Darkness came out in...
92.
Yeah. And it actually got a theatrical release and, you know...
And had a lot more success.
Yeah.
Than the others, but...
But I guess the first Evil Dead showed it can. And, well, it was a really low-budget independent piece.
Right.
And,
but they tried to make it a real... cinematic horror film.
Right, but I guess they weren't, Raimi wasn't even going to make an Evil Dead 2, but Stephen King saw it at Cannes and kind of turned around and pitched it to De Laurentiis that this needed to have a sequel.
Yeah.
And so the funding came for a sequel, and then they said, okay, we'll make a sequel.
Yeah, but I don't know where, you know, and maybe there's an interview for it somewhere. I didn't do that much research. I just watched the film. I don't know where they went from let's make a sequel to this horror film to let's make it a comedy parody sequel.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, where we're just going to totally just poke fun at ourselves, horror movies, gore films in general.
Well, you know, if you're working with... If Bruce Campbell is your lead, then you know what his strength is.
Being awesome.
Yeah.
Being completely and utterly awesome.
If you watch the first Evil Dead, you know that the shining moments are Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
Being Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, he can't act, but he's great at being Bruce Campbell.
Right. So, if you're going to make a sequel, make it Bruce Campbell.
100% Bruce Campbell.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, and it really is. It's the funny parts of the film. I mean, Bruce Campbell he's awesome on his own. He's just, you know, people would hate to be typecast, but typecast as himself.
I mean, yeah.
I'm pretty sure he doesn't have to work too hard to be, you know.
To be Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, to be Bruce Campbell.
To be some smart ass.
Yeah, a smart ass with a chainsaw.
You know, one of the highlights of Evil Dead 2 was the hand scene, which leads to the chainsaw arm.
Yes, of course.
But, yeah, the scene where, you know, his hand is pulling him across the floor, and he chops it off, and then, you know, it runs all kinds of mayhem where it's attacking him, and it was one of the more creative
fighting his own hand, which is just ridiculous, but it's one of those things. This is the classic B movie. I'm a fan of Mystery Science Theater and B-horror movies and gore films, and I mean, it's kaiju movies.
Yeah, and
anything that's, you know, kind of low budget and doesn't take itself too seriously, I can really get behind.
Well, and it's very referential. You know, it's this slapstick, you know, piece of crap, but it's referential. You know, the Necronomicon Ex Mortis, the Necronomicon is from Lovecraft.
Yeah.
And, you know, it...
Yeah, it does its homework.
And, you know... Even the slapstick is referential to the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
Apparently there's the scene where he's making the chainsaw hand. There's over top of the door is a Freddy hand.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have to go back and
Which
watch
apparently
that.
Is a thing that went back and forth. There's like a Jaws poster in a Craven film, and then...
So they all just kind of give a little thumbs up to each other.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and hey, Evil Dead referred to something Wes Craven in it, and then Wes Craven referred to Evil Dead in his, and then the Freddy hand ended up above the door.
Oh, that's really... I mean, and that's cool. It's, you know, a lot of times in Hollywood as well as in life, you know, people are way too prone to just try to snipe at each other to try to be on top.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool when everybody go, I like what you're doing.
Yeah.
You like what I'm doing, you know. Thumbs ups for everybody.
Yeah, because if you make a good horror film, somebody else also makes a good horror film, it doesn't detract from your film.
It's the old, the rising tide raises all boats.
Exactly.
You know, if we're all making good horror films, it's everybody's going to be better. And
80s horror was definitely a rising tide. It was it was a thing there for several years.
It was an ocean for several years.
Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street,
Friday the 13th, Halloween, exactly. And, you know, getting into Hellraiser, and it really was 80s horror. It really could be its own genre of film because it really about the midnight. Well, yeah, by the mid 90s, I guess it had either worn itself out or just like sort of ended.
Well, and you know, there were these rules for 80s horror that don't apply to any other style or time of filmmaking. And, you know, it got to where you knew the rules and you knew what was going to happen.
Right. And you know, it's funny because some of the splat pack, you know, sort of nouveau horror guys sort of had those rules too. You know, some of the Eli Roth films,
right?
And, you know, some of the Rob Zombie. I'm a big fan of Rob Zombie's two horror films. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed those, and they sort of have the same rules.
Well, and then you get the Scream comes out and points out the rules and says, "This is what you can't do," and
then somebody immediately goes and does it and dies.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. It's this is why you can't do it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the rules apply.
Yeah, it's like that what's that insurance commercial that's on TV where they're in like the scary place and they're like, "Why don't we just take the car and leave?" "No, we can't do that. Let's go hide in that barn full of chainsaws," you know. that's kind of what it is, you know. Here's the trap, and they just go whistling, strolling into it and just get hacked to bits, and then
have you seen Cabin in the Woods?
Yes.
Yeah, that is the ultimate movie to explain all of the old 80s horror movies.
Right.
They all went to this cabin in the woods as a government experiment and to feed the gods, to keep the world from ending.
Yeah.
And they had all of these different supernatural entities that could pop up and fulfill the need.
Yeah. Yeah. And coincidentally, Evil Dead 2 starts, as Evil Dead 1 did, with a cabin in the woods.
Exactly.
So,
don't they all?
Pretty much. They either start there, or they're at summer camp, or they're, you know, they're in some wooded, secluded area in probably Vancouver, you know, where it's cheap to make films. And, but yeah, it really is. This is everything I like in a movie.
Yeah.
Because some people, and I've got friends that watch movies and are very serious about it.
Yeah.
I just can't do it. Like, films should be an escape. They should be, you know, just a way to get away from everything. And I can't do that while seriously studying this, you know,
this
nouveau black and white film.
Yeah.
Some hipster bullshit. But I can watch Evil Dead 2. You know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's an escape, and you just watch it and you have fun and you just go along for the ride.
Right, yeah.
And you don't, if you pick it apart, there's no point. You just start and you pick at the nits, and there's so many nits.
Oh, of course. You know, it's not a finely woven garment.
No,
it intentionally leaves a lot of loose threads, and you know, just you know, enjoy it.
It's that fun sweater, not the
It's not cashmere. It's an ugly Christmas sweater that knows it's an ugly Christmas sweater. You know, it's really what it is. And it's funny because I was talking with a guy that I work out with, Bishop, about this movie, and he's one of those guys. He's a cinephile. He loves movies.
Yeah,
you know, he's a guy that, you know, he watches all the Oscar films, and he has very strong opinions. He freaking loves this movie.
Well,
you know, we sat there for 20 minutes and talked about Evil Dead 2 and how great it was.
Well, and it's
and I wish I would have invited him over.
Exactly. You know, the people who, you can be a cinephile and like this movie because it's so referential.
Right.
And because, you know, and so many things have referenced it. So there are discussions that you can go, you know.
Well, and I mean, in Evil Dead, you know, the reason why we even mentioned, or I even mentioned watching this movie, was Evil Dead is an institution now. Like, it's been a play, and it's coming. They've remade the original.
Right.
And which now it's coming out okay. You know, I actually liked it.
It was okay. If it was its own thing, and the original never existed,
it would have been fine.
Or if they had just used a different name,
yeah,
it would have been
fine.
I mean, it was fine.
It was a movie.
Didn't really enjoy watching or saw her tongue in half, but you know.
Yeah.
But that's the modern horror.
Right. And what I did appreciate about it was they did say, we're not doing any CGI in this film. We're going to do it the old school way. And that I could appreciate. And you could tell because a lot of the gore, it looked homemade. It wasn't the CGI, you know, craziness. Right. It was just, it was a little bit of an homage to the old school films. And now the other reason why I mentioned it is the new TV show.
Yes, yes.
And the TV show is what I'm looking forward to. And I really think it is going to be a little more, it's going to be more attuned to Evil Dead 2 than the remake of the movie, which was a little more of a serious film.
Right, and they got Xena.
Yeah. You've got Xena and Bruce Campbell. What can't they defeat?
What can't go wrong? Yeah.
Unless Xena's the bad guy. Or girl.
I don't think, from what I've seen, she's not.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I mean, it's just very little parts of trailers, but from what I've seen, she's helping out.
I mean, I really hope that it's just a tongue-in-cheek, just slasher, you know. Mm-hmm. It's very much along Evil Dead 2. It'll be a great watch. I'm sure it'll have a huge audience. Because, I mean, you know, we've, society, like it's some big thing.
It thinks it
TV is, to me, overly saturated with, like, serious zombie films.
Yeah.
And TV shows. I mean, there's The Walking Dead. There's the new, like, Dawn of the Walking Dead or whatever it is. Yeah, yeah. Which, you know, I watched, and it's okay.
Is it?
It's,
I've heard it's not really, but
it's going to be one of those things that if they do it right, it's going to take a while to get into because they're focusing on, like, day one.
Yeah, they're focusing on how it happened.
Right. They're trying to actually create characters instead of in The Walking Dead where they just, everyone's sort of generic, you know. There's your generic tough guy. There's your generic, you know, hunter guy. And there's the good police guy. And
well, it's like, you know, with Ash versus the Evil Dead, they're using Bruce Campbell, so they're obviously just advancing the storyline.
Right.
Whereas, have you watched any of the From Dusk Till Dawn?
Oh yeah,
The series where they're basically the first season was, which I haven't seen all of the first season. I've seen about half of the first season, but it was a more stretched out, more developed version of the movie.
Yeah.
And now,
which I'm okay with. I was okay with that. I love From Dusk Till Dawn. Right. For a lot of the same reasons I liked, you know, Evil Dead.
But I guess the second season is, I heard Robert Rodriguez was on The Nerdist a couple weeks ago. Yeah. I guess the second season kind of is going to go more into the Mayan mythology aspect of it where, you know, where they showed the Mayan pyramids and stuff like that at the end of the movie.
Right.
And they're going to go into the vampire mythology.
In that part of the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, that's really kind of an unexplored, you know, in the world of vampire, which, you know, I'm a little familiar with. You're very familiar with.
Yes.
They don't really go over a lot of it in Central America.
Right.
You know, a lot of it, it's very much the old school European. If vampires could be wasps, they would be wasps. The old families of Europe, but yeah, I think that will be cool, you know. And Robert Rodriguez, he's going to do a good job.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
it's his thing, and he's got creative direction of it. So, you know, it's and we talk about it a lot. It's one of the cool things with, you know, having so many TV outlets and so many avenues to get your stuff out there is something like From Dusk Till Dawn or the Evil Dead series probably not making TV 10, 15 years ago,
right?
You know, but now, you know.
Well, it's. And
you
well,
can appeal well, to a little bit of a smaller audience.
I mean, From Dusk Till Dawn is only out there because Robert Rodriguez started his own channel.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's making it.
Yeah.
And putting it on.
Yeah. I mean, it's. But, you know, like I said, you know how much money it would have cost to create a channel, you know, 20 years ago when there's only 80 of them or 60 of them instead of 500 and something?
Right. Well, and I mean, even, you know, the 90s, the independent film kind of broke out, and that was in no small part due to El Mariachi, which won Sundance.
Yeah.
Which was Rodriguez's first film, and it was shot on a camcorder.
Yeah.
And patched together on VHS. And he was the first one to really do that and release it.
Yeah.
So that, and that opened the door in the next year, Clerks won, and yeah, and there was just
a explosion,
huge boom in independent films, just because people started to realize that you can make things cheaply.
And you don't need, you know, big corporate backing,
right,
you know, for a project. And it was nice that they realized, hey, maybe these big studios aren't the be all end all of filmmaking.
Right. You know? And we've, you know, we've gotten cheaper, higher quality shooting devices. Like,
oh yeah.
Are
you kidding?
But the distribution channels are...
My phone probably shoots a better video than, you know, Evil Dead was shot on.
Yeah, I mean, a couple years ago, some film came out, and, you know, it was shot entirely on an iPhone 4.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was an independent film, but it had a minor release, you know?
Yeah.
But then again, some of the distribution channels are, you know, if you want to get into major theaters, you're not going to do it anymore with an independent film.
Right, right, yeah. You have to have some major backing from somewhere. Either you have to be, you know, one of those guys who's just got enough money to do it their own or do it themselves, or you've got to be in tight with some studio.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, there's the internet, and there's TV, and there's YouTube, and there's a million ways if you really just need to get it out.
Yeah.
It's there.
Well, I mean, at this point, there's YouTube personalities, and at some point they're going to... Yeah, I'm sure some of them have tried to push into film, and I'm sure it hasn't gone all that well because it's a completely different animal.
Yeah.
But at some point, that has to be an avenue. You know, at some point, there's going to be good independent films just dropping on YouTube.
Right. Or just dropping on, like, you know, where things used to be direct to video.
Right.
Just direct to Netflix, direct to Amazon Prime, you know, where you can get one of these other companies to go, this movie's good enough to where we'll pay you to release it.
Yeah. I mean, they'll go direct to VOD at this point instead of direct video.
Yeah.
You know, and... But, you know, instead of, yeah, I don't know.
But, you know, the Evil Dead TV series, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's, what is it, Showtime that it's coming on?
Stars?
Stars, okay. Yeah, I knew it was one of the premium tier movie channels. But yeah. I guess not one of the big ones.
So it'll be available shortly thereafter, I'm sure, on Amazon and iTunes, and that's how we'll see it.
Yeah, and that's how I'll find it. I will do exactly what I did with Daredevil and just wait till the whole season's out. I'll binge watch it, and I'll have a ball, and we might talk about it again.
Yeah. Who knows?
As weird as it sounds, I mean, I'm watching... It's all been this big... Like, society is almost like a parody of itself at this point, and... Because with Facebook and everything, you get all of these, like, you really do get, and this is completely off subject.
It's fine. We're used to tangents.
Get the worst, or, like, the weirdest of people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, things, it really is funny, because things that people would probably not be willing to admit that they think, that they believe in.
Like 5 years ago?
Oh, yeah. Like, even when Facebook first came out.
Yeah.
Like, they just let it fly now. Like, it's, oh, yeah, you know, I like, you know, such and such. And just say these awful, terrible things that, you know, probably wouldn't want to say in mixed company. But you will release it on mixed company.
Yeah, and then you have such a tight-bound group of friends on Facebook that they go... You end up getting support for this thought.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You end up, yeah.
And you wind up in these little groups that where, you know, just.
It's an echo chamber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. That's a perfect. And perfect.
Actually, I posted an echo chamber post about a week ago. And I'm trying to break the echo chamber. I'm trying to, you know, I've.
It's a good name for an album. If I ever release an album, I'm stealing, man.
Break the echo chamber. Yeah.
I like it.
You know, I had gotten to a point on Facebook where I had had enough conflicts with people that they were gone.
Yeah.
And I wasn't getting any dissonance. I was not getting the other side of the story at all, ever.
Right.
So I made a conscious effort like a week ago and I said, okay, I'm going to start trying to refriend some of these people that have gone away because it's not healthy to have just one point of view all the time.
No, I agree. And it's, you know, and everything sort of comes back to politics for me because it's what it is. But I've really had to make a conscious effort to not get rid of some of the people that just say, and I mean, the outlandish crap that shows up.
Well, it's, as hard as I try, I do not understand how anyone can back Donald Trump.
Oh God, me either. But, and it's funny because I have, you know, when I think and when I see generally your Donald Trump supporter, I think and I see knuckle-dragging troglodyte, probably a Walmart shopper.
Right.
And you know, but it's, you know, what is scaring me is that some people who I actually like, you know, and I actually like his people,
mm-hmm.
really think this guy's a good idea. And I really... I don't see how, like, with the things said.
Well, and they're touting him for his business sense, and even on the business side, he has been he's declared bankruptcy 4 times.
Yeah,
so
he's gamed the system
how
to get himself out of bankruptcy.
Exactly.
Four times.
So
yeah.
So if his tactic is to run it into the ground and declare bankruptcy, is that what he's going to do with the country?
Right. And I mean it's. On top of that, you know, the whole, you know, I don't, and this is one of the things that was really bothering me. So one of the things that really was bothering me, you know, about the things he's saying is, you know, oh, we not only need to kick out all the illegals, but now we're going to get rid of birthright citizenship. Just because you were born here doesn't mean you're from here.
Right.
No, that's exactly what it means. You're born here. You're from here.
Exactly.
You're an American.
Mm-hmm.
You're born here. You know, so then, you know, it he's trying to change the definition of what it means to be an American.
Yes.
You know, and just because what he's saying is if you don't talk like me, if you don't look like me, if you don't act like me, you're not an American.
Yeah.
You should go.
Yeah. I mean, he's trying to take us back so far.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the amount of people that have latched onto that are like, yeah, we need to get rid of everybody. Yeah. I mean...
Yeah, and they're trying to paint it like that the only reason that nobody else is saying all of this is because of political correctness. And if that is the case, then this country is full of a whole hell of a lot of despicable people.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you try to hide behind the oval. I'm just saying it. I'm saying it. Everybody believes it, but I'm the only one with the balls to say it.
No,
you really probably just are a bigot. Like,
yeah. We don't all believe that women are inferior, but no. That's what Trump is trumpeting.
Right.
Trumpeting.
Yes. And it actually, it saddens me because someone that I was backing for Senate that challenged Lindsey Graham
mm-hmm.
when they were trying to primary him has signed on with Donald Trump. And
yeah,
she was
I saw
a woman.
That. Yeah.
The first woman to ever graduate from the Citadel signed on with Donald Trump. Do you really? I mean, like, where does... That even, like, as a person, if I were a woman, and I hear the things he said and what he believes, how could I go, you know, that's the horse I want to hitch my wagon to.
Right.
You know.
I don't want rights.
Yeah.
I don't want control over myself.
You know what sounds like a great idea? Barefoot and pregnant.
Yeah.
Or you know what? Even if I do want to work, I'm okay with making, like, 2/3 of what, you know, the men are making. They probably work harder anyway.
Well, and our friend Tim posted a thing the other day that had like all of the bullet points that everybody's, you know, gun rights, free health care, and all of that. And it had the two candidates side by side, Trump and Sanders.
Yeah.
And each of them had, you know, ones that they had and didn't have the others. And the guy off to the side who supported everything that was in common or that was not in common was Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, and it's, it really all, like, Trump is a parody of, like, the
of
worst
human
part,
being.
No, of the worst part of society.
Yeah.
Like, he really is, and it's...
And he's becoming a mouthpiece for it.
But because he now has this, like, echo chamber of the mm-hmm. internet, like, people that really latently feel this way can talk to other people who, you know, really latently felt that mm-hmm. way. And now they have reaffirmed each other's beliefs, so they think they're right.
Right. And it's casting a horrible light on the far right.
Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, God.
Yeah, yes. I mean, there is no way if Trump is the nominee for the far right, that they get any moderate votes.
No.
Any.
No, and what's going to be really interesting, yeah, it's something that I've argued with, and I've come really close to leaving some groups that I'm in, but because of the I like other opinions things, I was actually kicked out of one.
Woohoo.
You know, I have a lot of libertarian views. I consider myself a pragmatist, but idealistically, mm-hmm. I would be libertarian. Now, this is purely idealism. Mm-hmm. You know, in a perfect world where people aren't corrupt, libertarianism is great. You know,
but
I am willing to admit that it's not practical.
But yeah, also on paper,
communism is
a wonderful thing.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. And in that same vein, I think libertarianism is great. You know, we would love to live in a perfect society where everybody just took care of themselves,
mm-hmm.
and you know, free market was good, and you know that. The big guy didn't take advantage of the little guy,
mm-hmm.
and everything worked out great.
But I know that is not real. That's
not realistic. But, you know, some of these people that you talk to, because I see some things that Bernie Sanders supports,
mm-hmm.
like getting rid of the NSA spying. NSA, if you're listening, go fuck yourself.
Hi.
I'm on a list anyway, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, that and getting overturning Citizens United to where, you know, the Koch brothers can't donate $20 billion into the campaigns and, you know,
it's
where you can't buy politicians. I'm taking those points and getting rid of needless wars overseas that we have no business being in. Those points are enough from my libertarian side of beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
To be willing to fight another day on some things where I may not agree with it.
Right.
But to talk to some of like the hardcore libertarians in the group that, you know, these groups that I'm in, oh, well, you can't support him and be a libertarian. You know, no, I can. Because I'm smart enough and I'm old enough to realize in life, you can't get everything at once.
Right.
You know, you've got to pick your spots. Get what you can get when you can get it,
mm-hmm.
and then be willing to retreat on other areas to fight another day.
And Sanders is actually targeting some of the major, major financial inequities.
Exactly. Like he wants
to get rid of student loans, basically.
Yeah.
Because student loans are killing people.
Yeah. Yeah. It is I say gimmick. It's a scheme.
Yeah.
It's a get rich quick scheme for these banks to take people that don't have.
Mm-hmm.
Give them sort of a false hope of having,
mm-hmm.
but making them mortgage any future they may have from it on the chance to get it.
Yes.
You know, so it's, you know, I'm going to give you the banks tell you I'm going to give you the opportunity to maybe make money one day.
Mm-hmm.
But in return,
I'm going to require
that money that you're going to make.
Yeah.
Who the hell comes out equal on that? I mean, if you're going to, if you're maybe, you know, in med school or something like that, I can maybe see that as, mm-hmm. as realistic. But if you're going for a theater degree, the hell do you really think that $40,000 to $100,000 worth of student loans you're going to get is really going to help you with your theater degree?
Well, and there are actually some universities that are out ahead of this. Like Stanford, if your household makes less than, I believe it's $150,000.
Yeah.
A year. Stanford is free.
That's great.
And
I mean, you know, for some of these schools, and I mean, I'll pick on the one right down the road, Furman, if you've got a $100-200 million endowment, your tuition shouldn't be 70 something thousand or $60,000 a year. I mean, it's a pretty campus, but you know what? Instead of sitting here and hoording those $300 million, you know, maybe you should give, you know, tuition breaks. Maybe you should, you know, try to help out students so they're not.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who actually wants to serve their customers? Because really, that's what these universities and these students are. It's a customer, you know, relationship.
Now, the thing that I think is, if Sanders wins the Democratic nomination, it's going to get interesting because the Democratic super PACs will kick in on his side.
Yeah.
And he has no control over that.
Yeah, but he can sort of determine who he takes money from.
No, but the super PACs are completely independent.
That's true.
That's how it works. They are completely independent from the candidate.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
The Democratic super PACs that are being built for the Hillary machine will still have that money. And they're not going to spend it to back Trump.
No.
They're going to spend it on this election because that's what it was raised for. And they're going to put it behind Sanders.
You know, as funny as it sounds, if by some weird, just god-awful coincidence, Trump wins, Sanders wins, the far left versus the far right, it would not surprise me if those super PACs got together and said, you know what, we're going independent. We're going to cast Joe Vanilla, who is middle of the road on everything, and we're going to throw hundreds of millions of dollars at him. And we're just going to see what happens, you know, because I think they'd stand a chance.
Because if
he can spend all of his time calling candidate A a Nazi and candidate B a communist, then, there's enough people who love sound bites and are scared of, you know, change that would probably vote him in.
And that, you know, that in and of itself would be a catalyst for the breakdown of the two-party system. Because it's already in danger because of Trump.
Well, and
Trump is already endangering
Trump
the GOP.
Trump and Sanders both. Because here's the thing. Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat. He doesn't identify as a Democrat. He's the one independent in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've supported, and I was actually a delegate to the Libertarian National Convention four years ago. You know, I nominated Gary Johnson. I was one of the delegates from South Carolina. And, I always supported the third parties because I didn't feel like everybody's... The whole country's opinions can't fit in two boxes.
Right.
You know, so I always thought we needed maybe 5 to 7 boxes. You know, but we could never break through. You could never get a legitimate third party. You might be able to get one that can play spoiler every now and then, but nothing serious. Nobody really gains traction. And so what's happened is now you have third party candidates that have infiltrated the major parties.
Yeah.
And are now saying all sorts of wild, outlandish things and are making the mainline party candidates say things that they don't want to say.
Yeah.
And agree to things that they don't want to agree to. Mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton never once said anything about free college tuition until she went, holy shit, Bernie Sanders is gaining on me. I better start saying some things that's going to try to draw some votes from him.
Right.
And so I'm enjoying. But and to go back to it, I did some quick phone research. 2013, Furman University, right down the road, $64,000 a year to go to. They had a budget shortfall of $6.4 million with a $600 million endowment. Yet they were going to close the golf course.
Yeah.
That's right down there. They were going to close the golf course because they didn't have enough money to run it. Even though they have $600 million in the bank that could have just kept it going.
Yeah.
You know, so the whole college thing is ridiculous.
Yes.
Because if this little small school down the road has a $600 million endowment, what does Clemson have?
Oh, yeah.
What does South Carolina have? What does, you know,
what
do these other huge major universities have?
Public universities.
Right. Public universities funded by taxpayer money that are...
And lottery money. Yeah.
Yeah. By lottery money. Well, sort of.
Well, if we just, you know, just legalize cannabis and that'll pay for it all.
It's working in Colorado.
It is. It's really working really well in Colorado.
Yeah, it's working really well in Colorado.
But and that's what's scary, and that's how this ties back to Evil Dead. No, it's not scary at all, actually.
It's not scary, no. It's funny because you have two people on this podcast that fully support the legalization of recreational cannabis, tax it.
But
two people that can't do it even if it were legal,
even
because
if it's
of
legalized,
our jobs.
We can't do it, yes.
Right, but that's something that, you know, that's when I signed on the line to work there, that's something I agreed to.
Right.
So. But the whole, you know... I don't know. It looks like society is becoming a parody.
Itself. Idiocracy is very much playing out.
It is,
and we are at a point where we can pick to go with electrolytes, or we can pick to go somewhere else.
Right, right.
And there is a huge portion of the population that really likes Brondo.
That's very true. It is true, and it I don't know, and it's not just that. I mean, it's just, I don't know. And maybe it's the proliferation of news and the fact that we have a 24-hour news cycle. Mm-hmm. And any sensational story is going to get national attention.
Yeah.
But it seems like everything's just sort of spinning off kilter. I mean, do you know what happened in Roanoke today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
where the guy just walked up and just started...
On live TV.
Blasting a live television interview.
Yeah.
Just walked up and just... Shot the reporter, shot the cameraman, shot the woman they were interviewing, and just went away.
Yeah.
Does that happen?
It's like, I mean, kind of bringing it back to Evil Dead, it's like day-to-day life is becoming the absurdest horror story.
It is. It is. And that's the crazy thing about it. That, you know, everything is so weird and out there that, you know, I can watch something like this. And it's, you know.
And it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's
that's funny. Relaxing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's funny and it's, you know, but it's not that absurd. You know, I'm a big, like I said, I'm a big fan of Rob Zombie's films. House of a Thousand Corpses? That actually wouldn't, if that showed up on television, be like, well, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not surprised those people live out bumfuck Kentucky, you know.
Why'd they go out there? Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, they're there. They're probably no weirder than some other people.
Well, we've gone on long enough now, after kind of scraping and trying to figure out what to talk about. We, huge tangent. So I guess we'll, let's see here. Next time we will jump off of, Live's Secret Somedy. I wanted to do an album by the band Live, and I kind of wrestled on which one to do.
Which one is
that? That's the third album.
Okay, that's the one that came out after Throwing Copper?
Yeah, Throwing Copper was the obvious one. It's the one with all the hits. It's
the one I've actually owned.
But Secret Somedy, and The Distance to Here is the one after it, which is the entire piece is more, it's more, you know, steady quality throughout. But Secret Somedy kind of stands out to me in retrospect as their best album. It took me a while to get into it because there are some low notes, but there are some really good songs that have gotten better because they were kind of prophetic. So they've become more relevant.
There's actually a track on this album called America.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
That's amazing.
So it is, and so we'll jump off of Secret Somedy, and we'll
talk about America.
America, exactly. We will, yes. I am at Woodle on the Twitter and the Instagrams. You can follow Black Market Toast both on Twitter and on the Facebook page. And yep. You are?
I'm that Joe you know on Instagram. I'm the Joe you know on Twitter.
And we will talk at you next time.
Bye.